And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that we will all be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, Gordon got here early. He's been meditating. He's getting his he's calm. He's peaceful. He's serene. Welcome, Gordon C.
I'm Gordon. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to bed by this time. I go to work at 4 o'clock. So if I fall asleep, you just keep on doing what you want to do. In 1932, May the 29th, in Louisville, Kentucky, God gave me to Bob and Pearl Carrington. They thought I was just a wonderful baby boy. I often wondered if they knew what was going to happen once I'd have been on the list of crib death babies. And they used to say, get rid of it before you start to liking it, or you won't get stuck with it the rest of your life. So they were stuck with me the rest of their life. I had a good mom and dad. I never had to hide anything from them, no matter what it was, good, bad, or indifferent. But I never could say things that I knew was wrong because I knew they didn't want me. I was never taught to do wrong. I was taught to respect people, to treat people's house like it was their kingdom, so to speak, and I tried to do that, and I wasn't taught to use profanity, and nobody in my family ever gave me a drink of whiskey. There was times that things happened that my daddy did teach me what the hate switch was for. That's the way they taught us how to jitterbug. And if you don't know how, you'll learn, I promise you. I was a problem child. I had problems from the word go from the day I was born. And they haven't left. And they took control of my life in a lot of ways. I was the last of 7. And all of them are gone. And all of my personal family is gone. I'm the only one left. And I had a hard time with people. I was quiet. And if something happened in my room, you bet your money I saw what it was. And I had trouble separating a lot of things with people. You hear people talk about this way or that way, and then you watch them, and they do just the opposite thing. They deal with think you think they're the same. No. And I had strong emotional problems. I was thrown out of grade school because of my disrespect for teachers and people telling me what to do. And I was thrown out of high school for the same reason. Out of quite a few high schools here in Atlanta. And the last one I went to, they saw me come in, just turned me around and said, we don't want you to go somewhere else. And that's just the way it was. I don't have no book learning, so to speak. And I've always had a uncomfortable feeling towards people, which is quite obvious by the way I was growing up. And my mom and dad got divorced when I was 9 years old, and I always stayed good. So then after that, I guess I just kind of started drifting to the streets. Now back then, the streets had one thing to teach young people. And I had ability of learning fast. I always learned the wrong things fast, as usual. And everything got to going this way and that way. And I thought, well, maybe if I went in the service, I'd find somebody that could help me get a hold of my life. And so I went into the Army, and I found out that those fellows in the Army, they'd never drink moonshine or granddaddy made moonshine. So I go get moonshine, take it back and say that to those Yankees who never drank moonshine. And I wouldn't cut it, so you know what happened. It would go down smooth, but it would wake you up when it hit. I had my first drink at 15, and my first drink I turned a pint of whiskey up and killed it. And about 30 minutes after that, everybody had to tell me what I did. I didn't know about it. I took a blackout, took a drunk. And I had some trouble in the Army because of my hard-headedness and because of my way. And then you found out some of the things I was doing and was on bivouac, and they made me bury my hole. If some of you know what a 6x6x6 is. And they had this little bitty cute little shovel. They made me dig that hole with that cute little shovel. They made me put my pants in the bottom of it. He said, now cover it up. And so I covered it up. And he says, now if you want to go on pass, you'll dig that pass up before we leave. I told him, if you wanted that pass, he could dig it up. I'd go and leave when I got damn good and ready. Well, one thing led to another. And it was in Columbus, Georgia, at Fort Benning. And Phoenix City was still kicking its heels. And I got in some trouble with that man. They took me back to camp. And the captain, he took me in his office and says, I'm going to get you discharged. I don't want you in here. I'm going to get you an undesirable discharge. And he says, you go there and you stay there and you don't leave this building now until I tell you you can leave and you can go on. And I thought, well, you just wait. And while they had me, I slipped out of the building and went to town five times. The last time they put a man over me with a shotgun, and I firmly believe the man would have shot me if he'd had a chance. But they gave me my discharge. I went to the colonel and I asked him, I said, oh, please send me overseas anymore. Don't give me a discharge. I don't want a discharge. And he said if he'd talked a whole little bit earlier, he would could have helped it. But his consul Farnay couldn't, so they gave me an undesirable discharge. And I came back to Atlanta. All right, you see, I've been thrown out everywhere I've been there, even Army. And all my people was in the electrical union, 613. Some of y'all may be in there, I don't know. So my cousin got me in 613. And I was still drinking every day, drinking beer and doing as I please. Wow. And there's a beer on the corner, like right out that street, and then you'd come over here to this building and you'd go to school. But we'd get off work and be sometimes an hour, sometimes a couple of hours where you'd have to go to school. And so, of course, you know what's coming, don't you? I turned out school, I couldn't see the writing, much less the thing. And then once again, the man over the school says, you come to work drinking again, and you go, I'm not going to lie about it. I'll tell him to stick his school up in his family. And he says, I will, but you won't come back to see it. Well, see, what I was in, I had a half year, I'd done gone through 3.5 years of electrical. In a half a year, I would have got my license. And if you don't go to school, you can't stay in the union. Because you have to graduate from school to stay in the union. So once again, I'm thrown out of something else. And not any of the time did anybody say, well, maybe you should kind of look for some help or something. Nobody ever said that to me, Mom. When I was growing up, they either beat you up, throwed you out, or locked you up. That was the only help they gave kids back then. I'm so happy to see what they're doing with young people today, trying to help them get their lives in gear, because I hope none of them never have to go where I get. Well, when I got out of there, and I come back to Atlanta, and they threw me out of the union, I thought, well, I got to figure out a way to do things. So I was drinking Buckhead one night, and I started home. I said, now it was real late, about midnight, and I said, I'm going to have to get some more money because I'm out, and I normally want to drink tomorrow since I'm not doing anything. And they just opened this big, beautiful bank at Piedmont and Peachtree. I thought, why don't I go in there and open me up an account, and then I'll have some money to drink on tomorrow. So I got into the bank, and I was sitting down at the desk, and I had a bag full of money. I didn't know how much, but it told me later it was $7,500. Let me show you how it was. I thought, what's the use of robbing a bank if nobody knows about it? And of course, you know who Dummy called, don't you? I called the FBI and said, "Hey, Dummy, I brought him around your beast. You can't do nothing about it." And he didn't say anything for a while. I just blowed him away. He said, "Hold on just a minute." Then he got it, and then he talked to me for a little while, and he said, "Don't look out the front door." And I said, "Well, all right." And I hung up. See, I was drinking bad. And I got to talking. You know how you get an alcoholic talking, they forget the time. I wouldn't make that. It must have been 50 people like that. And every one of them had those big guns. He said, "Go out there." I said, "You crazy as hell." I'm like, I said, "Do you know how big those guns are, they got?" And he said, "It's all right." I said, "No, it's all right for you. I'm not going out there." And so the man come and he opened the bank and they let me out. And that FBI man was the first time in my life has said, "This young man needs help. He don't need to be locked up. He needs help." Well, poor boy, you know what they're saying, poor boy's help. Most of y'all won't remember, but there used to be a place down in middle Georgia that was called Millersville. And that was going to be an education for real. And so they sent me down there. And I found out what that strange odor was. I smelt on that ward. When they locked me up in that little room, I had a real nice little room for me. Just, I was the only one in there. It had this pad on the wall where I couldn't hurt myself. But then when I smelled that oil, I said, "Something right." And what it was, that was the smell of shock treatments. Shock treatments is kind of like an instant blackout. It shorts all your circuits and you just kind of run dumb for a couple of days or so. And the first time I didn't know better, but the second time they had to fight me all the way to that shop machine. And no matter how bad you fight, not to be able to take it there. So I finally got out. And on the way home, of course, you know what I did. I stopped at the pet store, and I always bought half a gallon. A lady asked me, "What's the trouble? Why do you buy half a gallon if you're just going to have one drink?" I said, "Well, I might want enough." But as long as there was something to drink in that bottle, I didn't close my eyes. I might have passed out, but I did not close my eyes. Now, every time I took the top off a bottle, no matter how big it was, I'd always throw the top away. They said, "Why do you do that?" I said, "Because that stuff was made to drink." I have never related anything yet that happened in my life to the drinking I was doing. And it kept on and it kept on. And I got in some more trouble with the state, and the state thought it'd be nice for them on another vacation. And it was paid for, but who the hell wants to go? They don't have the best resorts there is, you know. And other people in that resort are kind of disagreeable too, so it was just kind of a mess. And but that happened again and again, and it last time it happened, they sent me to a place that I hope nobody ever has to go. They had reached a point that they sent me to the criminal insane. And when you walk in those doors, they do any damn thing they want to you, and anything you can do about it. Because when you walk through there, they know nobody gives two cents about you, so they do what they please. They beat the hell out of you, they do everything else, anything else. And I was started fighting them again, and then of course I think, this is not working, this is not working. I'm going to have to do something. And finally one of the tenants said, "Well, why don't you help us out? And then you won't be the one getting it." In other words, they got patients to do it to other patients so there could be no conflict on the people in the hospital. And I'm sorry to say this, but the first time it happened, my reward was a pint of whiskey and 5 Darabont. The Darabont is morphine. And I sat there in that little hole in that criminal insane building. I said, "This is talking about, I'm living uptown now. But this is what disease did to me, no matter where I was at or what the circumstances were. As long as I had a drink of whiskey or something to block out reality, I was happy. And I stayed down there, and the doctors, and there was five of them, and two of them was real well-known. I got to go over in front of the board, and they cleared me, said I could, they had no use for me. I mean, I was sane as I was going to be, and they said, but we can't let you walk off of state property by yourself. You're going to have to get somebody to come walk off. You know, I called people in here and all, and my people too. And you know, when one soul can walk me 100 foot so I can leave. And I just made myself promise when I get to Atlanta, they're going to pay like hell. So I just walked off one day, and they never bothered. And nobody wanted me. The state didn't want me. The hospital didn't want me. Nobody. I was just me. Nobody wanted me. I can understand today why. But what changed my mind is once again, when I left property, I got me a half gallon. And by the time I got to Atlanta, I was so drunk, I didn't remember who I was mad about. Y'all understand how that is. And so I started living on the streets all the time to stay away from my people. You know, we used to sell our blood for $7 a pint at blood banks. There were 3 blood banks, and there was 5 of us that would go to all those 3 blood banks a week. And every time we'd get $7, we'd pull it together, and we'd buy some booze, and we'd go out somewhere to enjoy. Living up town again. Now that's the power of alcoholism. That's the power of this sickness. No matter what your place in life, and no matter where you're at, as long as you have a drink, you're quite happy. I did not want these things to happen to me when I was growing up. This is not what I set my goals on. I didn't want to be this type of person. But I had got some help, but I was still the alcoholic, so the help was no good as long as I was putting the booze in. And the last time I walked up to my mother's house, she saw me coming up the sidewalk. It had seemed like she says, you know, I got me out almost ready to see you dead and come up the sidewalk. And I went in the house, and she let me clean up and all. And everything just happened on the phone. And the first time I came to AA, somebody mentioned, I never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous before I came here. I wouldn't know what it was if you told me. I heard Sorry Drunk, Low Down Strong, Rotten Little SOB, Nothing But a Drunkard. I heard those over, and I knew what those were. So I said, all right, I will try. So the first time I went to AA, I had 5 peace warrants on me. And so Maggie and some people at the Biscayne Room at Dredgen Drive and Peachtree Road in 1968 said, if you stay in here, you're safe. They can't bother you. And of course, you know how that was. Time I got a little bit clear-headed, I was still young. I've been blessed with good health all my life. And when I got a little healthy, I thought, well, they can't touch me. And so I left out, and soon as I got out, I got my job. I got my job, and I went to work. My first payday, I didn't even know what my first stop was. And I had about a half gallon of vodka. I kept this up on and off. I couldn't stay sober but 2 or 3 days, and I started to get sober, and I'd become aware, going to crack and fall into pieces. And I'd go get a drink. I knew the drink would stop it. And you reach a point when you're like that. You know the drink's killing you. You know that's what's the cause of you being in the shape you're in. But yet you know if you don't take the drink, you're going to do something much worse to yourself in the condition you're in. And so therefore you go back and you take the drink. But what I'm saying now is I'm still more afraid of going without the bottle than I was with the hell the bottle held for me. And that's a place of your mind and the control that's having those. And this kept on for a while, and I think the longest I've ever 3 months, I just went out and stayed out. It took me 13 years to make a year. And I knew it was getting me. I did just the impossible thing. Yeah, when I got sober that first time, and I went over to Clarkson a lot, and I went to Biscayne on Sunday, and I come down there once in a while. The thing about that is I did partner meetings. I did whatever I had to do around here, lead meetings. One time I did this meeting for a long time years ago. My boss at that time said it'd be good if you learn how to shut your mouth and listen. And I didn't understand that, but I came to his, I did his friggin' speaker meeting. I'll tell you what my thoughts were of him, which y'all probably know, don't you? After all of this going on, I stayed sober 17 years before I went back out. And I went back out because I could not stand being around you low-down people. Y'all were the sorriest, no good, rottenest bunch of people I've ever been around in my life. I had rather die drunk than to die in your presence. I never had a slip. Every drink I took was deliberate and intentional. I went back out for 4 years, and I drank a quart of whiskey every day. I was nearer dead than I thought. I smoked 2 and 3 packs of cigarettes a day. So you know the toll it was taking. And finally one day, my dog, an old dog, I'm taking up that old dog, but my dog walked up beside the porch. She wouldn't sit beside me no more. She'd walk over and keep her eye on him to see what I was going to do. I said, I've been thrown out everywhere. My dog bit off. I mean, is any lower place? I called somebody to come in with me. When I called them, I sat down and I told God that if you help me be able to go without the drink, I'm going to do everything in my power to learn to love your children. And that's you people. See, that was why I never did have a whole lot of what a lot of people have when they've been those 17 years. I never could ask one of y'all to do something for me. I never could allow you in Gordon's space. I never didn't know how to share with another human being. And I'm sorry to say that, but y'all were just about the sorriest things I ever laid my eyes on. And when God did his part, for the first year and a half when I come back in the program this time, I stood in a meeting just like this. It was like a discussion meeting. I said, if I won't drink as bad when this meeting's over as I do now, I'm going to get drunk and I don't give a. You know, since that meeting was over, I have never thought about a drink. It'd be 9 years from Christmas. I have never thought about it. I want another drink. A man told me, he said, "Now, Gordon, God has did his part. You want to drink for a year and a half. And God has kept you from drinking. I want to drink bad. I want to run so bad." That's what it is, running when I drink. I want to run so bad I didn't know what to do, but I didn't. And I'd look at you people and tell you I love you. And I'm sometimes that feeling comes back. And it isn't what I ate, it's what I'm looking at. You know, it's a more enjoyable thing to look at than people, but the day I won't say that because so since that day I made it a promise, and the man that was trying to help me then made me make him that promise. When I come to meeting, I would hug some of you people and I'd tell you I loved you. I said, "But it's not." He says, "I don't care what you mean. I don't care what you like it. I'm asking you to do it." And you can't hug the same one every time. And then I started hugging the young lady. And at that time, a part of me was still alive. The old woman told me, she said, "Gordon, there ain't no serenity on the slip. It's just a mess." I thought these sick people have an answer for everything.
Yeah.
But I did these things, and I tried my best to learn to understand y'all and to be part of y'all's life. And I kept listening to y'all talking. And I got to sitting by and listen more to you. When somebody new would come in, I would sit down and I'd talk to them. And what I found out is one day I noticed that when one man didn't show up that I'd been talking to, I wonder if he's all right. I hope he's not drinking. See, I don't know how you drink, but I know what the drink did to me. The drink said it don't matter where you live or die, just go and do what you want to do. And I said, I hope he isn't drinking. Then what I did is I caught myself, I was actually learning to love you people. Now I promise you, that scared me worse than anything that scared me in a long time. I got my sponsor and I talked to him. I said, well, what is it? What's going to happen? He says, just come keep on doing what you're doing. Or you're getting down on your knees and you're talking to God. And I was aware that there was a lot of people in AA at that time that was saying some really disgusting, sick things about me. And they wouldn't let me off for no matter whatever, whatever. Some of them even went to our work and said these sick things to people I worked for, and they caused me to lose my job. It took me 4 years to get a peaceful job, and then they went there and run their mouth, and I lost it. They did that twice and caused me a job. That's why I refused to tell my story for a long time, because I don't want to lose the job I have now. Those people have been nice to me, and I don't want to see in their eyes what other people have looked at me. What the people were saying wasn't true, but it don't matter if it's true or not. Let me warn you something there. Both our big books speak very clearly on gossip, the viciousness of the mouth, the tongue. See, once it comes out, you can't take it back. And when enough people hear it, some people don't believe it, and they go share it, and it never goes away. It's still now. This is it. Since 1983, 84, and you know there are still people like that. In. So there's some people in this room here just the other day. They asked somebody else about it, about what they're saying, and said, "I don't know what to tell them, but it isn't true." And some people here found out it wasn't true. But see, the gossip lives on. I still suffer the consequences of it. When you say something about anybody, or you think you know something about somebody, you get on your knees and you ask God to give you the courage to go look at that person and say, I've heard something and I don't like it. Would you tell me what it is? You know, out of all this time, not one soul has ever come and asked me if it was true. Not one soul has ever come and said, I'm sorry about these things I said about you. And they have long-term sobriety. Not one of them has. But then this is when I started getting my prayers a little different with my God. I said, God, I love you and I trust you and I'll work with your children and I will love them. And the reason I can stand up here now and tell you that I love you is quite simple for one reason. Because this young man could not go 1 hour without a drink till I come in your presence. Now you heard some of the hell I was in. Now when something can help you walk out of that and help you learn how to live with you without a drink, how to look in the mirror and not be ashamed of what's looking back. It has helped you get close to your God to where you know beyond any reasonable doubt, my God is real. If yours isn't, just don't give up. He will let you know he's real. Then how can you not say you love me? I didn't say I like you. I said I love you. And when I say that, I mean I hope God blesses you with every beautiful thing you know. I hope God holds your hand every day. And I thank God for putting you in my life. Because the reason I said I could not stay sober without you till I come in your people's presence. See, I wasn't the nicest person to get along with either. And y'all kept telling me to come back. I don't know whether you meant it or not, but it didn't matter. I was coming back because for the first time in my life, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for one reason. I didn't come for a young lady. I didn't come for a job. I didn't come to please anybody. I came because I wanted to find a way to live without having to drink alcohol. See, I drank alcohol to learn how to live with me. I didn't drink alcohol to learn how to live with me. I did not know who I was when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics, and I didn't have the slightest idea. I tell people I had the slightest idea who I'm living with, but I wish he'd get wise because he's about to kill me. I drove me through every... Oh, Lord, some of the things. Do you just think back in your own career, some of these sick things in the rotten, low-down, crazy places we go and we come out of it shining like a new... Who do you think does that? Don't say you did it. It's only by God's grace I didn't get killed. I had cop blood of Bill. How many know where Bill it is? Years ago, this was cop and I did something. He didn't like it. And he came back on. He said, now I'm aimed dead serious. I felt the wind from that bullet come by my head. And see, it was after I felt the wind of that bullet, he hollered stop. I said, oh, you should have hollered stop before you shot. I took off down the road, and there was this house. And I crawled up into that house, and there was a chow dog, and then I grabbed that chow dog. The whole house. And I stayed in that house for about 2 hours, so I heard his car no more. I bet that dog never had nobody calling that house. That's what you call save your own ass. And I'm going to share something with y'all too. When you speak of yourself, don't ever belittle yourself. You are one of God's children. You are one of the treasures of this earth. But if you haven't got real soul yet, there's a beautiful human being and they're just waiting to come out. And waiting to be a part of it, just like with me. It may take a while, but you can't just keep coming on and keep trying. You are worth every bit of effort you put in it. And quitters and sissies and wimps do not make the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They can't go through the part of becoming an alcoholic. They're not stout enough to be an alcoholic. Keep quitting, not drinking, go to church or something. We just keep on going back to get the crap beat out of us again and again and again. There was a young lady in her talk, and I never forget it. It was beautiful. She was talking to her dad. She was getting all cleaned up, ready to go out that night. And she says, he says, you come and you look like hell, you feel off and this and that. And you say they treat you like dirt. Why do you keep going back? Now, her answer is beautiful. She says, I don't know. I just had to keep going back. That is alcoholism. I don't know why I had to keep going back to that bottle, but I just had to go back. And it was God's grace that gave me awareness of where I was at. And when I looked in the mirror, I did not know who I was looking at. But I do know this, it wasn't what my mama or my daddy or I wanted me to be when I grew up. AA, I haven't been locked up. I haven't been anything of those bad things happened to me since I've come to the program. All the peace force got gone. I can walk down the street with my head up, no matter who's coming at it. I can look people into the eye. I speak to people. When a young lady was with me one day, and I went and hit the courthouse in Decatur. And I spoke to everybody I passed. And if I spoke to 30 people, you know how many spoke back? Maybe one. She says, why do you do it? They don't speak back. I said, because I want them to know that I recognize them. And because of that, somebody spoke to me and said, I mean, they ignored my prayer. They tried every way in the world to ignore my existence. You see what I'm getting at? And you might not like me and you might not appreciate me, but I think I'm one of the best people in this room. And if you can't see that, you ain't sober yet. And a lady, a good friend of mine, she told me, said, Gordon always say something good about you because nobody else will. And I'm going to share something with you now about the program. If you come here to make friends, you could be in trouble. If you think it's because of this or that, just sitting in this chair, you're wrong. Those traditions is what gives you the right to sit in this chair. Those traditions is what gives you the right to come in this door. And those traditions says no one has the right to refuse you the opportunity to come to an AA meeting if you say you are and you want to be here. You're the only one that can take that chair away from you. You're the only one that can say that you have a right in that chair. And don't ever forget it. She put that in my head until I come in. I had several people that took me and took me looking at them just like this. One of them was at a supper table and one of them was in a room like it, sharing with me just what kind of low down piece of garbage they thought I was. And you know, I looked at them and I said, I want to thank you for sharing that. When I go home tonight, I'll look to see if I can see any of that in there, and I saw I need God to help me remove it. I don't allow other people, and I talked to him about this before me, and I wasn't going to let him remove this tape. But see, if I'd have did that, I would have been allowing other people to tell me how to live my life. AA don't get me sober if you tell me how to live. AA gets me sober so I can be a part of life of my choice. And you have no right, and you do not, I won't give you the right to tell me I can't be. I am a human being. I have a lot of hang-ups. And I'm not the most enjoyable thing to look at. I'm getting old. I don't hear good, don't see good. I don't talk good. I don't have no education. I can't talk good. And I don't do a lot of things. I don't dress good. Sometimes I might have a little bit of odor. But it's not an alcohol odor. And it's not my retainer valve didn't break. I used to tell somebody, they said, what do you mean? I said, well, I used to, when I was drinking in bed, I said, well, I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom. And then I'd get up and go to the bathroom and figured that I'd already let go in the bedroom. And I'd go back in there and I'd say, that's somebody that messed in my bed again. You don't think I'm going to clean that mess, do you? It's probably Howard. You know? But I have to watch out, man. If I tell you I got to go, because the retainer valves don't work the way they used to. That's just part of the age. You get older. You know, brother, now I'm 78. All my people are gone. All the people I have today in my life is out, and the people I work with, and the people I have some friends I said I'm wounded. But there's no way I can let you know how good it made me feel the first time another human being went in public with me. And there wasn't shame for people to see them with me in public. See, you can sense a lot of things like that about people the way they are with you. Somebody had treated me like I was an equal human being. You know, that's the only thing God really asks of us to do with other people. It says, everybody shall be equal in your eyes. It don't mean everybody has to be wealthy, everybody has to be good looking, you know what I'm talking about. What it means is everybody will be equal in your eyes. I don't see not this or that. I was, and as most of you know by my age, I was very racist when I come in here. And I'm so ashamed of some of the things that happened in my life. But I promise you today I don't see black, white, or nothing else. I don't see male or female, or young or old. I see people in a program that can help them find out who they are and live one day without drinking. And that's what I'm not ashamed to sit there, but I'm not ashamed to talk to them about. Now, I'm going to share something else, and I don't mean to offend people if I do, but it's hard my thing what I had to go through. I had to fall. Y'all heard my place, and you know, I still felt like I was better. Before my nine was out there, I don't know. And I'm not sure it's all landed yet. But I had to force myself to talk to people like I was in the position I was in. But you know, I would have never have learned and acquired a passion for other people's suffering, joy, and just helplessness, I don't know what to do. If I had not have reached out to the people I didn't want to be around, reached out to the people that I really didn't want to be with, that's when I started becoming a part of God's wishes for me on this world. That's all He wants me to do. And look at what He's gave me in return. He gave me 100% contact with Him. And there's nothing that you can say or do that will make me feel even less or even more, because I know today I'm a child of God. No one will ever take my rights that away again. Not my bottle. See, the only way my bottle can hurt me is if I pick it up and I drink it. And who was else talking over here earlier? Gary over here. He's here somewhere. He's back at the back somewhere. I think I saw him. If I go out today, it's my own fault. It's not a slip. Because I know beyond a reasonable doubt, I remember what I told you about today and where I came from and the things I did. And that I don't want to go back to it. I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to stay there, just back there, to stay a human being and to stay a part of other people's lives. And once again, I believe in meetings ending on time. Because I'd make a set, about an hour in that chair is all your butt can stand, so that if your butt can't stand it, your mind can't hit. Go on. I'll tell you, I do love you beautiful people. I wish they hadn't took me so long too, but God bless each and every one of you for helping me find a way to live if I hadn't drink whiskey. And thank y'all very much.
Thank you, Gordon. There goes the valve. I was going to ask him. He said he used to do 12-step calls, and they'd go early on. They would go in somebody's house around midnight, and that person would be wasted. And they'd look around. They'd feel so bad for them that they'd clean the house, you know. And he did that a few times. And he said, that's it, I draw a line on that. I guess somebody didn't clean his own damn house. That's funny. Okay, so seventh tradition. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Your generous donations support this group in AA zone. And see, we have no dues or fees, but we do have expenses. Please contribute as you can. This is one of the many ways we can practice the principles of the program, so we do all we can to put these great speakers up. So we appreciate your participation as well. Julie, can you hand out the checks?
Hi, I'm Julie, and I am an alcoholic. We have a chip system that marks our time in sobriety, and I'm just going to go through it once and offer them each up as I go. We have a white chip, which signifies surrender. If you want to join our program for the first time, or if you want to get a white chip after having gone out and done a little research, you can tell us what it's about. Anybody want a white chip? All right. How about a silver chip for 30 days in a row? 90 days. Anybody have 90 days? How about 6 months? Anybody want 6 months? All right. How about 9 months? Anybody have 9 months? Anybody have a year? This whole room. Okay, anybody want a white chip? I'm going to offer this one again. All right, I'm going to leave it up here if you want. Congratulations on the ones you do have. Thank you.
Okay, now it's time for announcements. Anyone have any AA-related announcements? Yes, sir.
I'm Grady, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grady.
upcoming weekend in lovely Athens, Georgia. I think it's the 57th annual state convention, and it's a prepaid convention, and what that means is it's free. And oddly enough, Georgia is the only state in the country that is and has been forever a free convention. They got a bunch of stuff going on, motorcycle rides, discount golf, 24/7 coffee, open mic joint, Halloween gig. If you've never been to one of these things, you'll just be stunned at the good time that a couple of thousand drunks that don't drink anymore can have. That's it.
Thank you.
My name's Kaplan. I'm from Jekyll Island. There's a retreat there, the 5th, 6th, and 7th of November. It's good times. If you're interested, talk to me about it.
Okay, thank you.
Huh? Your coffee that one.
Any cost?
Yeah, I think it's $30 for registration, and you know, if you want, they have rooms and stuff, so you know, they're $60 a night, something like that. So let them do whatever you want.
Okay, and Naval Club is having the Big Shot Golf Tournament Saturday, October 23rd at Mystery Valley Golf Club. Same location as last year, maybe the year before. If you're not a golfer, there is a 50-50 raffle, $10 a ticket. Half of that, $5 goes to NABA, $5 goes in the pot. And they drew the winner last year at the tournament, and that person pocketed $400. So if you want to contribute to NABA and also have a good chance, the odds are pretty good, a lot better than the lottery. So it's tax deductible too, I think. And then we let's see what else we have. We got a Halloween dance coming up. Anybody on top of that? It's posted on the board. It'll be Saturday night, right after the 12 and 12 meeting. I guess it starts at 9:30. The closest Saturday to Halloween. And they have a new DJ for this event. So the dance is always great here. Next week, we've got Tom S. of the Wednesday Night Men's Group around Roswell. It's a group that, it's a traveling group that they have meetings in each person's home where they host, and it's a great group of guys, and Tom S. has been sober since 2001. He'll be telling his story, and then Mark L. of the Wednesday Night Big Book Study tells his story the week after that. And let's see, is Pete still? Pete, would you mind signing sheets when we're over with? If could we have a couple of volunteers to help us put the room back in order before we leave? Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Great, appreciate it. Well, I guess that'll wrap it up for another Monday night. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
That's not the day we have posted. Jen, would you take us off, please?
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine Christ's kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back to the works that you work in.
You got $8.
Hey, where the hell are
you?
Hey, sir.